Well, good morning. It's great to be able to remember and acknowledge the role of the Young People's Union, YPU, in the history of the United Church of Canada as a whole, and Parkdale United Church in particular. And it is good to see everybody here this morning. Attendance at church can be important, but a little nudge or encouragement can sometimes help. One woman at a recent Sunday service opened her purse to get her offering envelope, and a television remote fell out onto the floor. The usher picked it up, but he said to the woman, he said, "Do you usually bring your television remote with you to church?" She said, "No, but my husband refused to come with me this morning, so I feel this is the most evil thing I can do to him legally." So, along with many others, including some who are here today, I look forward to Monday evenings during the latter part of the roughly 30 years period prior to the mid-60s, when a large number of late teens and early 20s gathered downstairs in the Tape Hall for fellowship and fun. Many of us plan to take on projects, and perhaps you'll note Bob referred to the history that has been prepared of the Young People's Union, but we often have plans to do things, but we sort of never get around to it. We'll do it tomorrow, but tomorrow never comes. So luckily, we have the beneficiaries of Bob's academic background and his interest in historic events and his ability to actually get things done. So we're very appreciative of that. But YPU was a time when our beliefs were being formed, and one of the YPU program areas was entitled Faith and Evangelism. Now, this morning's scripture from Paul's letter to the Hebrews is all about faith. And Huda mentioned earlier the first words of Paul's great historic definition of faith. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things to come. For many, finding faith is not easy. We have all been christened Jack or Jill, or in my case, Edward, but I sometimes think I might better have been called Thomas. Perhaps you think Thomas might have been a better name for you as well, or Thomasina, if you're a girl. We all have doubts at times and wish someone would show us the beef, as it were. And, as Huda also pointed out, we can all point to people whose strong faith informs our beliefs. They may be family members who have gone before us, or historical figures such as the Abraham in this morning's scripture, or a William Wilberforce or an Abraham Lincoln whose faith sustained long and hard efforts to see the first real steps taken to abolish slavery. History is helpful, but I want to mention two more contemporary people who have had a great effect on my thinking. Malcolm Muggeridge was born into a non-religious, middle-class British family. As a gifted writer and TV commentator, he was not affiliated with any political party, but wholeheartedly took on the powers of the day, whatever their stripe, including the government, the British Broadcasting Company, which held great sway in mid-century Britain, and even the royal family, which caused him to be banned from the BBC and other establishment circles on more than one occasion. Muggeridge was a marvelous communicator whose ability to explain issues still resonates with me. He wrote and talked from experience. He sought the promised land in the Soviet Union of the 1930s, but soon realized that the hype that had attracted he and his wife and caused him to give up a prime position with the then very influential Manchester Guardian newspaper was pure fiction. He gave up on the Russia experience, denounced the Kremlin ideology and its propaganda, and continued to do so for the rest of his life. Muggeridge taught school and university in India and Egypt. He was part of the British intelligence service during the war, serving in Portugal and its African territories, and was intimately involved in the post-war aftermath in France. All the while, he wrestled with his thoughts about the Christianity he had been exposed to as a student at Cambridge. Finally, successful and influential, he chose to give a voice to programs for the mentally challenged and established a strong and supportive relationship with Mother Teresa. He and his wife were eventually, in the 1980s, shortly before his death, received into the Roman Catholic Church. But Muggeridge was not a saint, far from it. In his early years, despite his up and down beliefs around what he saw as the good and bad of the church, he would have been described as a hard-drinking philanderer and a super sarcastic commentator with little concern for the effect of his comments on others. But as we know, people do change, thank goodness, for his sake and for ours. Now, having listened to Muggeridge on TV and marveled at his ability to clearly and forcefully comment on most subjects, I then read his wonderful autobiography, Chronicles of Wasted Time, The Green Stick, Volume 1, and The Infernal Grove, Volume 2. Initially, I had no inkling of his uncertain Christian leanings and was surprised to see sporadic comments on matters of faith in his story of a life lived to its fullest. I strongly recommend his autobiography and his other writings, and I turn to them often. For someone whose life has been described as a restless quest for faith, Muggeridge writes as follows: without faith, there is only night. However bright the neon lights shine or how fast the jet planes fly, there is, it seems to me, no substitute for faith. Without it, life is unlivable. He goes on to say, faith tells me it is possible to establish with our Creator a living and loving relationship. Through the Christian revelation, our relationship with our Creator is translated into human terms. Now, I have a very slight connection with the other person I want to mention, Brian Clark, a Canadian who grew up just north of Toronto, lives in Mahwah, New Jersey, from where until his retirement he commuted daily across the Hudson River to New York City. Brian and his wife Diane are longtime personal friends and traveling companions of my sister, Willa Jean, and her husband, Gordon McDougall. Gordon also commuted daily from New Jersey to New York City. Muriel and I are not friends of Brian's, but we have met him, most recently at my niece's wedding in Wyckoff, New Jersey. On September the 11th, 2001, 9/11, my brother-in-law Gordon, who worked for the Bank of Nova Scotia, was on a plane from Newark to Los Angeles that was forced to land in Kansas City. Brian, who worked for Eurobrokers, was in his office on the 83rd floor of the 110-story World Trade Center Tower 2. A plane struck the 73rd floor of the tower, leaving many, many people stuck between the impact area and the roof. Thinking that they could be rescued by helicopter, nearly everyone headed for the roof and did not survive. But Brian and only 17 others were able to descend around the debris and somehow make it down and out. Now, every time I drive along Preston Street or Carling Avenue, you're probably the same, I marvel at the height of the tallest building in Ottawa, the 53-story Claridge Tower, and compare it to the Trade Center towers, which were more than twice as high. Hard to imagine. Brian has an inspirational story to tell of his long descent and his related spiritual experience. His demeanor throughout this ordeal is incomprehensible, and to me, answers some questions a doubting Thomas might have. Brian is extremely well-spoken, and a number of his inspirational interviews can be found on YouTube or similar outlets. While I would never want to have been in Brian's shoes, wouldn't it be wonderful to have the same emphatic assurance of God's presence that he was given? So lastly, I must cite my wife, your experience as a real faith builder, not a one-time flash of certainty or insight, but a gradual drip-by-drip exposure over many years to good people, good friends, and this congregation. I know the actual quote from Philippians is, "The peace of God that passes all understanding," but I choose to say, "The grace of God, which passes all understanding," a grace that I've been blessed with for more than 88 years.